Who says tech can't be human?
What's going on, Hacker Valley fam? Welcome back to the show. I'm just getting back from Zero Trust World hosted by ThreatLocker. I go to a lot of conferences and I gotta say, this might be one of the best produced conferences hosted by a cybersecurity vendor. And here's why. It's easy to create a conference and name it after your company or your product, but it takes dedication, thoughtfulness, and an extreme attention to detail to host a conference that follows a theme while also leveling up your attendees in that domain. And let me tell you, ThreatLocker came through. Going to Zero Trust World, we had two objectives. Number one was get to know some of the speakers and attendees. And number two was to host a live stream with ThreatLocker's newly appointed Chief Product Officer, Rob Allen. Along the way, we also had some fun. We had some good times. And in this episode, we'd love to give you a sneak peek into those 3 days that we spent at Zero Trust World. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Hope you see why I say Zero Trust World is special. ThreatLocker, they brought us out to the event, and they're also the presenting sponsor for this episode. So naturally, I'd love to tell you a little bit about them. As security professionals, we know that it's no secret that one wrong click can lead to a catastrophic cyber attack, and nobody has time to train, retrain, and remind your entire workforce about the consequences of running unpermitted software on their devices. Cyber attacks are devastating to any business, and without the right solutions in place, your organization could be at risk. That's exactly where ThreatLocker comes in. Cybersecurity starts at the endpoint, and their team has built a zero-trust endpoint protection platform that strengthens your defenses from the ground up. At Zero Trust World, I also had the opportunity to hear directly from their customers that with ThreatLocker in your cybersecurity arsenal, your team can sleep better at night because the known and unknown software, the application exploits, and even network traffic can all be blocked by default. If you're looking for a proactive solution that will keep your business better protected in the face of cyber threats, be sure to check out ThreatLocker.com and tell them Hacker Valley sent you. That's not all we got. We also spoke with Rob Allen at Zero Trust World and got to learn more about the ThreatLocker team and their care that they give to each customer. And we also spoke a bit about the future of endpoint threats. Let's jump into the conversation. What's going on, Hacker Valley fam? Welcome back to the show. We're doing something a little different today. As you can see behind us, we are at Zero Trust World hosted by ThreatLocker. And to bring this event to the foreground, we brought in a great guest. We have Rob Allen, Chief Product Officer at ThreatLocker.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks for coming on. So I gotta ask, you know, you've been at ThreatLocker for a while. You've probably been to multiple Zero Trust World. What is it like to see all of this really come together now?
And it's phenomenal. The growth over the last couple of years has been amazing. I think the first version, we had 90 people. We today have close to 900. So the growth has been incredible. The work that our marketing team put in, our events team put in to bring it all together, never ceases to amaze me. I don't think there's been much sleep had by many of them over the last couple of days, but I think every customer I've spoken to, everybody who's here, have really enjoyed the experience. They've all learned something, which is probably our most, the thing that we most want to get out of this the most, is for people to go away with a little bit not more knowledge than they had when they arrived. And hopefully it's mission accomplished on that front.
So they're leaving with more knowledge, but what's the goal and the intent for, you know, this event, especially for the people that are watching at home?
Well, that literally it. I mean, it's primarily about helping people protect their organizations. It's about telling people about some of the threats that are out there and how they can defend themselves against those threats. So it is very much about sending people away with a little bit more knowledge than when they arrived. If we've done that, then I think we've done a good job at the event. And as I said, all the feedback I've got from people I've spoken to has been very much that. They've learned, they really understand now more than they did before, which is, as I said, mission accomplished as far as we're concerned.
Yeah. So the event is titled Zero Trust World. Is it only Zero Trust tracks? You know, we've been speaking to a lot of the attendees. There's a certification and training, but what about the speaking pieces that have been going on?
There's something for everyone, really. I mean, we've got obviously labs. The labs are very much technically focused. We've got Ducky Labs, we've got Metaspoil Labs, we've got Flipper Zero Labs. And the Ducky Labs, the crowds are literally around the building to get into. I mean, every year we put on more and more and more space in these sessions, and every year they are consistently packed out. We've had to put on double the number of Ducky Labs that we had planned just to accommodate all the people that wanted to come to them. But we like to think that there's something for everyone. I mean, it's not just nerds. It's not just techies that are going to enjoy this conference. We've got, you know, CEOs, CISOs from big organizations. There's content suitable for them as well. So we're trying to make it a mixture of both technical and non-technical to suit anybody who might come.
I've met a lot of chief product officers. I've worked with a lot of people on the product side of the house at, you know, cybersecurity startups and vendors. And what comes with the new role, the new title of chief product officer for you?
Well, one of the things that I tried to do, and one of the things that kind of, I'm not going to say sets me apart, but I'm spent, because we went from basically no staff in EMEA to, as I said, over 30, I spent quite a lot of the intervening time as a solutions engineer. So basically working with the product, working with the customers. So I still have, you know, 20, 30, 40 customers that I deal with pretty much every week. I still have calls with them. I'm still very much engaged with them. So showing them new things, gauging their reaction, see if they like this, see if they don't like that, finding out what the difficulties are, what they find easy, what they find hard, and basically just using those relationships, using those engagements to try and improve the product every single day. It's something that I won't say a lot of people in similar situations, they don't keep dealing with customers directly. And I think it's so, so important that I do keep those customers directly, because they are our best feedback. If they're finding something difficult, then it's something that we have to fix. So just keeping that day-to-day interaction with customers is something that I found really, really valuable, and hopefully the company do too.
So with being the chief products officer, are you now responsible for the direction and the vision for the product?
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, without putting too fine a point in it, to a large extent, Danny is the man with the plan. Danny is undoubtedly the brains of the operation, and I have no qualms about saying that. But no, working with Danny, with Michael, with the Redbull team, the development team as well, who worked so, so hard to bring new products to life, is, as I said, something that's really, really interesting and really gratifying.
So what are you hoping to see out of Threat Locker? You know, from my experience speaking with Danny, speaking with the attendees at the conference, it's all about really implementing that zero trust framework, but making it easy with allow listing, especially on the endpoint side of the house.
Absolutely.
You know, after you have get acclimated to the role, what are you hoping to kind of introduce into the product?
I think the most important thing that we can do is to make this manageable, to make it easy for customers to implement. Now, we've taken a lot of steps on that. I mean, the built-in applications we do, the learning process we go through, all of those things already make it far, far easier than other similar solutions. I've spoken to customers and prospects who've tried to implement other allow listing solutions and have spent, not an exaggeration, of years in doing so. I mean, I spoke to one customer quite recently who spent 4 years on a project trying to implement a competitor's allow listing solution. Just allow listing, just that one part, and has spent 4 years in the project. I've spoken to other people who spent 2 years, like 10 people spending 2 years of their lives trying to implement a solution and failing.
Right.
Now, that is the one thing that I've never seen with ThreatLocker. I've never seen a customer not able to implement a solution. But that's not to say that there are things we can't do better. That's not to say there aren't things we can't make easier.
Right.
Obviously, there are. And it's about finding those marginal gains, finding those tweaks, those things we can do slightly differently that makes customers' lives easier every single day. I think that's the most important thing.
One of the things I love about what y'all do is, you know, silly things like this, playing with drones, but showing the applicability to security. And I saw that, you know, you and Danny are both like very technical as executive leaders. So like, what are the things that, you know, do you think that executives should be sharp on from a technical standpoint?
Oh God, that's a really deep question. I mean, as I said, part of the ethos of this conference is about making people aware of the possibilities of the vulnerabilities of the attack vectors of right. things that they need to know about. And that's very much it. I mean, look, myself and Danny both have a love for technology. We express it in different ways. Danny loves Windows. I love Macs. I am right. He is wrong.
Exactly. I love Macs.
As has been discussed on numerous occasions. But no, look, at the end of the day, we are both techies. We are both nerds. Now, listen, I am nowhere near as technical as Danny.
Yes.
The guy literally wrote this. He created it from the ground up. So I wouldn't go so far as to say nowadays that he knows every line of code, but he pretty much knows what every line of code does. I'm nowhere near that, and to be honest, I don't ever expect to be. But I'm more the guy who uses it. He said, well, look, what if I do this? What happens? Or if I do that, what happens? Or this customer did this and it didn't work, that kind of stuff. So we kind of come at it from different angles. He's very much the gets down and dirty in the code.
Yeah.
Taking scalpels to code, taking out lines to see if it fixes problems, where I'm more okay, we got a problem here, we need to fix it, or we got something that somebody's finding difficult here, we need to make it better.
Yeah.
But we do dovetail quite well.
One thing that I think any company or team to learn from ThreatLocker, whether they're cybersecurity, enterprise, you know, just focus on enterprise security or, you know, building a startup, is the culture. I'm not sure if it's because I'm going around the conference with a camera and, you know, people are expressing their love for the company, but even off camera, everyone that I've asked about their role, like, hey, what do you do for ThreatLocker? They go into a long explanation with like heart eyes. They love the company. They love everything about it. And in fact, you all gave a few people cars for being employee of the year.
Yes, absolutely. And fully deserved as well. So yeah, we've given away 3 cars, I think, at this stage. We started it a few years ago. At the beginning, it was for the best salesperson or the best person, salesperson with the best results. Yeah. We expanded it last year. And I think very rightfully so, because it wasn't just about salespeople. It's not just a sales organization.
Right.
We've got support people who do amazing jobs. We've got infrastructure. We've got development people who do amazing jobs within the company. There's so many different areas within the company. So what we do is we basically have a vote every month. So everybody votes for the person who has helped them the most in the company. So it could be anybody within the four walls of the organization. But this person has helped me the most this month. And those votes are counted. End of the year, whoever gets the most votes walks away with a brand new car.
Yay. Wow. Powerful. And that's what I think that organizations, teams can learn is, like, you know, building that strong community, that strong culture. You know, you mentioned experimentation as one. You mentioned recognition as another. Are there any other elements that really, you know, build and create the ThreatLocker culture?
Well, it very much comes from the top down. I mean, I've given examples of, like, Danny is probably the most driven person that I've ever met. And that's
ever.
I've worked with driven people before, but the problem is the people I worked with that were driven before were driven in many different directions. So that ended up with me being driven demented. Danny is laser focused. So having that at the top, I mean, the other thing is he very much does get down and dirty in the weeds with problems and looking after customers as well. So, I mean, I give you so many examples. But one customer with an issue at one server last week, I was on a call with him for a couple of hours. We couldn't figure it out. We did all the troubleshooting we could. So basically, Danny got on the call as well. In that one call, and the guy's actually here today, but on that one call, I think the customer basically tested 14 different builds to try and identify what the issue is, because we knew this version of ThreatLocker was fine.
Yeah.
This version of ThreatLocker wasn't fine. He had a problem with it. So Danny went through the code with the scalpel initially, taking out lines of things that he thought may have been responsible for the problem.
Right.
He went from a scalpel to a shovel. So it ended up taking large amounts of code out. Still couldn't get to the bottom of the problem. But again, he didn't give up. He kept at it. I mean, he spent 3 or 4 hours one night, and we spent 3 or 4 hours the following night on it as well. So instead of taking a scalpel and then a shovel, what we did was we went through basically all the changes that had been made between version A and version B, and found the version that caused the problem, found the how it turned out to be two lines of code that were responsible for this issue with this customer, and fix them.
Needed.
And I don't know of any other company where a chief executive is going to go into that level of detail. Well, first of all, have that knowledge, the ability to go into that level of detail.
But and the familiarity of the code base.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But take his time, like probably 5 or 6 hours of his time, to try and figure out this one problem for this one customer.
Right.
I don't know of any other company that would do that. So it literally comes from the top down. I see Danny do that. I know to do the same thing as well. Somebody else sees me do that, they're going to say do the same thing too. So,
right,
it very much does come from top down.
You know, and that's another thing that I think that, you know, anyone can learn from ThreatLocker is the customer obsessive aspect. You know, whether you're working in incident response, whether you have your own startup, I think it's all about, you know, taking care of your customers, taking care of your stakeholders. I heard through one of the attendees that, like, the response rate is impeccable. If they open a ticket, they immediately get a response. They might call a number as well. They can get a response over the phone.
Yep.
What do you think are the things that, you know, enable you all to be so responsive?
To put it very simply, it's wanting to provide that level of service. It's being proud of the fact that you get a human being on the other end of the chat within, generally within 30 seconds. I mean, you say 60 seconds, but the average, I think, about 31 seconds. And I mean, I've been on the other side of the fence. I've been the customer working with vendors. You know what I mean? I've been an MSP. I've logged tickets with companies like Microsoft. 3 days later, somebody replies back saying, hey, have you still got that problem? I mean, that's no use to an MSP who's got an immediate problem, or any organization who have an immediate problem right now and needs help. I don't know if it's an urban legend, but Danny literally used to have the live chat notification that was a customer in chat. I used to go around the stereo system in his house until quite recently. So basically, he would know if somebody was waiting for a response longer than they should be. But no, it's something that we're really, really proud about. And it's something that we understand is important to customers as well, because they don't want to be sitting on hold or waiting around for 10 minutes for somebody to talk to a bot. Is going to ask some stupid questions, and then eventually they might get passed on to a human being. We know how important it is for people to get an immediate response to the questions. If they're contacting us, they need help. And it's our jobs, it's our responsibility to help them make comp as effectively as we can.
Can you teach that skill? Is that a skill that you can teach? Is that something that must be within someone? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's probably a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
Yeah.
As I said, it is very important to have leaders who lead by example. They do show that they have that interest in putting the customer first. So I think it can be thought. I think it can be demonstrated. I think people can. I mean, look, if you're in an organization and people don't care about the customers, you're not going to care about customers as well. If you're in an organization that really cares about the customers, you're going to really care about the customers too. So I think it probably can be thought, but it's certainly something that... It's certainly something that pretty much all our staff have very much taken up.
So let's talk a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about the products. I think that what y'all have built is really special. I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you select team members. You know, why are you on the team topic? So let's start there. You know, you're building the product. You're looking at the vision, taking Danny's direction, adding in your own. So it's a very delicate finding the right people that could, you know, take what you say and then do it, or take what you say and then say it to other people. What are the things that you look for, you know, when building out and keeping that level of excellence at ThreatLocker?
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. I mean, fortunately, in this particular arena, as in on this side of the pond, I've only been here for 3 months, really.
Yeah. Oh, in the US. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. No, I'm not here for too long. I was in Ireland a little while recently. So it hasn't really come up here yet. I mean, I'm working basically with a team that have grown here already. All phenomenal people. All phenomenal people. Again, all have the vision, all have the same desire Danny has. I mean, in EMEA, again, it was slightly different circumstance because we were effectively, even though we weren't a startup, we were effectively a startup over there. So hiring people over there was a slightly different, enterprise than it was here, but something like that.
Gotcha. So let's talk about the product now. You know, we kind of talked about how, you know, Zero Trust supports allow listing. I'm sure there's much more to it than that.
Way more than that.
Yeah. So what are some of the, you know, key tenets and pillars of RedLocker?
What they do is they allow everything to run or everything to happen unless it's known to be bad. So it's effectively block listing.
Right.
Let everything happen unless we know it to be bad. Now, what ThreatLocker does and what we do, which I think is so unique, is we basically take that principle and tread 180. So instead of allowing everything to happen, everything to run, everything to do everything, what we say is instead of permit by default and deny by exception, why don't you deny by default and permit by exception?
Right.
So the default action is to deny. The default action is not to permit. And it's such a simple concept. It really is. I mean, the concept of allow listing is not new. People have known about it for, I've used it for a long time, but it's always, as we discussed earlier, being very difficult to manage, to administer, to implement. So I suppose the secret sauce largely with ThreatLocker that we make it manageable, we make it easy, we make it incrementable for even medium-sized organizations to do. But the cool thing is we also expand on that. So it's not just about the what can run or what can't run, right? Because as I said, that's been a thing for a long time.
Right.
We also take that deny by default, permit by exception principle and apply it to, for example, what things can do when they're running. Because, you know, living off the land is a thing. You don't need to run something bad for something bad to happen. So what we say is, look, well, you have all these programs running in a computer. Do they all need to do, like, do they all need to access the internet, for example? Probably not. Do they all need to access your data? Definitely not. There might be 10 programs on your computer that actually need to access your information.
Right.
So why would you let anything other than those 10 programs access your information? So it's a concept that we call ring fencing. And the beauty of it is it's rules. It's hard and fast. It's yes or no. There's no gray area. Have you heard of the ducky challenge?
No.
So we like to demonstrate using rubber duckies. For those that don't know, rubber ducky is basically a hacking device. So it looks like a USB device for all intents and purposes. But when you connect it to a computer, it's not detected as a storage device, which it looks like. It's detected as a keyboard. But it's a keyboard that you can pre-program with commands. So one of the commands that we pre-program into our rubber duckies is basically a data exfiltration command. So it's a PowerShell command that will go through the user's documents folder and upload everything to our Google storage. And it's a really effective way of showing the danger of those things that are on your computer, because we're not putting anything in the machine. We're not downloading anything on the machine. We're not running anything on the machine other than something that's built into the machine.
Right.
Now, the ducky challenge, where the challenge part comes in, is basically we say to people as part of our presentations, look, this is a data exfiltration rubber ducky. It will steal your data. If you think your current cybersecurity solution will stop this and save your data, come talk to us. We'll plug it into your computer. If you win, you get to keep the rubber ducky. If we win, we get to keep your data. That's a sensible thing to do. To laugh and to say, no, you're not going to put that anywhere near my computer. But we've had so many people using so many tools. Pretty much every major EDR you care to mention, people have been using. They have used that. They've plugged it into their machine. And we've got the data pretty much every single time.
Yeah.
And it's really illustrative of the problem with depending on something making decisions about what is good or bad behavior. Because as I said, we don't make decisions about what's good or bad behavior. We apply rules.
Yeah.
So we don't block it because we decide that PowerShell going through a document folder and uploading stuff to here is bad. We block it because we say there's no reason PowerShell needs to access your files or the internet. So it's a different approach, but we're really, really effective.
Yeah.
But I do have a funny story to tell you about
the
ducky challenge. So I made that joke on stage in Dubai about almost a year ago now. It was about March last year. So made the joke. And after the presentation, two very serious gentlemen from a large Middle Eastern bank approached me at the booth. And they said, look, We don't want to plug the rubber duck into our computer, Bubby. Please, would you mind sending us a copy of the script? The PowerShell command.
Yeah.
So I said, no problem at all, gentlemen. And I sent them an email with very clear instructions. I said, you are going to want to change this portion. You can see where this is going, can't you? You're going to want to change this portion of the script because this is our Google storage, our blob. If you upload data there, it is accessible to the entire world. Okay, so don't do that. Change that part, but keep it and use it. Yeah, you can see where it's going. So the following day, I flew back to Ireland, and from Dubai to Ireland is an 8-9 hour flight. So I said, right, I'm going to switch off. Then a long few days, yeah, take it easy. I might have to sleep. I might much of me will be just basically switch off. About 5 hours into the flight, I got bored. So I said, right, okay, I'm going to get some Wi-Fi. So I turned the Wi-Fi on, and immediately my phone exploded with Teams messages from colleagues, including one of a picture of a guy on the phone looking really worried. And the caption was, Harvey on the phone to a Middle Eastern bank who did the Duppy challenge and got their data exfiltrated.
Oh,
they had run the script unedited. The security department of a bank had run the script unedited and had self-exfiltrated 338 files from their machine to our blob.
Ew.
Now, despite the trust of the thing being that we keep your data, we didn't keep the data, we deleted it immediately, obviously, but it shows that they obviously had a mistaken belief that something was going to stop this from happening.
Right.
Both were very much mistaken. But there is a twist in the tail of this story, which is that I tend to go into that blob from time to time and just make sure that nobody's done anything stupid, like self-exfiltrating themselves. And I went in about 2 weeks later and I found more files uploaded from the same bank. It's unbelievable, but there's so many different examples of that, but that's probably the best and the scariest one. But again, it illustrates the importance of controlling what applications can do.
Yeah.
Hop of what can run and what can't run.
One thing that came up over and over again was this education topic. You have to educate your team. You have to educate yourself. But when I think about zero trust, really got to start with the definition first. What does all of this really mean? So if you had to put it in your own words, how would you define zero trust?
So zero trust is I'll use my own words, and now I've used actually plenty of other government's words, but my own words is basically it's a way of looking at things. I mean, if you just sum it up in two words, I would count those two words to be deny by default, and default deny. That was three words. Sorry. It's been a long few days. Default deny, but basically it's the principle of least privilege. Now, another way of looking at it, and this probably my favorite way of looking at it, is to assume breach.
Yeah.
So basically, if you work from the principle that the bad guy's already in, he's on your network already, he's got access to your server, he's logged in, he's got full domain access to your server, what can he do? Now, in the normal run of things, the answer is a lot. He can pretty much run whatever he wants as long as it's not malware, doesn't get picked up by, you know, your traditional tools. And they can move laterally, they can exfiltrate data. There's so much that they can do. But if you assume that a breach is inevitable, and this is where I go back to the government definition, is to assume a breach is inevitable or has already likely occurred. So constantly limit access to only what's needed.
Right.
I heard a phenomenal story from a partner here yesterday, which was they are a very large organization and they were subject to a offensive pen test, so basically a red team pen test. Guy tailgated somebody into the reception area of this company, didn't try to go straight somewhere else, he went into the toilet and was in the toilet for about 10 or 15 minutes and then tailgated somebody else into the main area in the business, sat down at a desk, plugged the laptop into the desk and then proceeded to try and basically infiltrate the network. That organization was running Threat Locker with network control, where they literally plugged themselves in and they couldn't see anything else on the network. There was no devices there for them to scan. There was no devices for them. It looked like an empty network. So I just thought it was a really, really interesting example of the power of this. I mean, we've had multiple customers who have had pen tests done, and the pen testers will say to them, look, can you turn off this tool? Because we can't do anything.
Right.
And that makes my heart sore when I hear those stories. Because, no, of course we can't. Why would we do that? It's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine that when you go to someone and say, hey, you know, we do deny by default. You can create an allow list. they might have a spike in their heart rate, spike in cortisol, thinking, okay, this is about to turn into a mountain of work. But I'm sure it's not really that. It's not really that. So how do you, walk people over the ledge?
So the way I describe it to most people is that 98% of users do the same things in the same way with the same software every single day.
Yeah.
They use Office, they use browsers, they might use Teams or Zoom video conferencing, they might use the line of business application or two. But outside of that, they very rarely stray. And if they do, they probably shouldn't. So the point is, if you're a user, and effectively all we're doing is we're setting boundaries around that. So we're saying, look, these are the things that you need to do.
Right.
We're going to allow you to do all of those things. If you try and step outside those boundaries and, run a random coupon clipper you've downloaded or a piece of ransomware, absolutely, we're going to stop that from running. But we're just setting boundaries around what people can do. So for most users, I mean, the vast majority of users, we're just not going to get in their way. They're not even going to know ThreatLocker is there. Unless, as I said, they step outside of those boundaries. But it's really interesting. I mean, I've worked with, as I said, so many partners at this stage, and they always have that fear, that worry, when we turn this on, is it going to turn into a mountain of requests? And are people going to be requesting things the whole time? I mean, I one particular customer I worked with, actually the company I used to work with, one weekend we turned on about, I think we enabled protection for a long weekend, which is a great time, by the way, to turn this on because it's one of the most popular times for hacks to take place. We turned it on to about 400 machines, and I was quite inexperienced at the time. I was really worried and afraid that they were going to get a bunch of blocks and a bunch of requests through.
Right.
Two things actually were really interesting. The first was I assumed, and I had myself set up to get notifications basically when things were blocked and when things were requested. So I assumed that for every block there would be a request. So for everything that ThreatLocker stopped and said, hey, we've stopped this, that somebody would click on the button and say, hey, I need this. Wasn't the case. So for every 10 things that got blocked, one request came through.
Really?
Over the course of the following week, okay, they had three requests through that I thought were really interesting. The first was for, it wasn't Angry Birds. It was a game, basically. Okay, so I want to run this game on my computer. And again, they were able to make a decision as to whether or not to allow that. It was Minecraft.
Okay.
That was the first one. The second one I thought was even more interesting, which was that the receptionist in one of their customers, okay, a large accounting firm back home, the receptionist sent a request through for an IP scanner, okay, advanced IP scanner. Now, IP scanners are legitimate tools. I mean, it's not going to get blocked by an AB or a MUR.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, it's one of the first things that's run in the case of a breach because they want to see what else is out there on the network. So whether it be an advanced IP scanner or Nmap, they want to get a picture of what's out there. But this receptionist sent a request through, perfectly typed, saying, I would like to run this, please. Now, that set off alarm bells in the company. And they rang them up saying, why are you trying to run an advanced IP scanner on your machine? And the receptionist said, no, it wasn't me. It was our phone system guy. The phone system guy was in trying to do something with the phones, and he sat down on my machine and he tried to install a advanced IP scanner. That, I mean, in the normal run of things, if ThreatLocker wasn't blocking things,
yeah,
that would have been installed and it would have sat there as a potential tool to use or misuse on that network wherever. But the last one I thought was most interesting of all, which was a request came through from what appeared to be one of the partners in this same firm. And it was for a remote access, sorry, it was for a VPN tool. I think it was for VMware Verizon VPN tool.
Okay.
Now again, this set off alarm bells in the company because they don't use VMware, they don't use VPNs. So why is this guy trying to run VMware Verizon VPN tool? So again, they rang them up and they said, look, we got this request through. Why are you trying to run this? Turns out it wasn't the guy who was trying to run it. It was his brother who the guy had given his laptop to with passwords, logged into Office 365, still running the management software, still running everything from that organization, but he'd given it to his brother because it was finished. I don't need this computer anymore. Here you go, bro.
Wow.
And use it. Now, again, in the normal run of things, that company would have had no idea that that had happened. They would have no idea that there was a computer that was domain joined, running all of their software with their licenses and everything else in somebody else's hands.
Yeah.
But because, as I said, ThreatLocker blocked something from running, that was what triggered them to find out. And I have so many different examples, but I thought that was a really interesting one.
That is really cool. I mean, I think with something like, you know, ThreatLocker, the way you're describing it, you might get some interesting findings during a red team engagement. You might get some interesting finds when someone's trying to do something weird. And it's interesting to hear about the someone giving their brother their laptop, because I bet that happens all the time. And most people don't think to, well, let me format this R drive. Now, that's something that I would do, but
absolutely,
most people, I'm sure, oh, great, I have a laptop. Yep. What's the password? I can log in.
Yeah, I can go. And that's exactly what happened in this situation.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere. You have to start denying. And you can't just go trusting everything. I've asked a few people, well, where should you start? Should you start with the identity space? Should you start with endpoint? I think since there's solutions like ThreatLocker, why not start with endpoint? You're going to have to address it.
Well, the endpoint is where most of the action happens. Most of the breaches take place via the endpoint. It's a sad fact of life. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen elsewhere. It does sometimes.
Yeah.
But most of the action is on the endpoint. Most of the breaches start at the endpoint, even if they end up somewhere very, very different. And so that's why we are focused on that. That's where we're concentrating on.
So you mentioned buy ThreatLocker, which everybody should. But, you know, for anyone that wants to learn...
Sorry, let me actually rephrase that. Let me take a step back and buy ThreatLocker.
Yeah.
Try ThreatLocker. Because we do trials. People can test it out. They can kick the tires. They can see how it works. What I always say to people is, if you try this out, you deploy it to your machines, the worst thing that you're going to get out of it is complete visibility over what is running on your computers.
Yep.
And I can guarantee them there will be some surprises there. Because there always is. I mean, I worked for a company some time ago, and it was a relatively small, you know, 200 user network. And what they asked us to do was to look, show us all the bad things in our environment. And I had to say to them, look, we're not really interested particularly in good or bad. We're interested in allowed or not. But what I will do instead is I'll go through and look and see what remote access tools are running on your machines. Again, remember, this is a network of 200 machines. They have 6 different remote access tools, 6 distinct remote access tools running on my computer. They had Anydesk. They'd log me in. They'd go to assist. They had ConnectWise control. They had, on this, I thought this was really funny, they had the previous MSP's remote access tool installed and running on 2 of their computers. They'd obviously missed this part of the onboarding. But the really interesting thing was they had TeamViewer on 20% of the machines in that environment.
Yeah.
That company didn't use TeamViewer. The MSP that managed them didn't use TeamViewer. But TeamViewer was running on 20% of the machine. Now, I know how it happens, which is at some point in the distant past, some third party has said, look, I need to get into your computer to fix a piece of software. Can you just install TeamViewer from me? And the people duly obliged. But the problem with that is it sits there forever as a way in. So TeamViewer ends up installed on kind of shit center machines. And the problem in situations like that is there's no control. It's completely unmanaged. I mean, I saw a breach, report of a breach here a couple of years ago, which was a water treatment facility. I think it was actually here in Florida. And it was described as an advanced cyber attack. It was basically somebody got into a TeamViewer account and got into a machine and started playing with the levels in the water. That's not an advanced cyber attack. That's somebody who had a TeamViewer account. They probably used their own username and password or their personal email address and a password that they use on 50 other websites, which is the problem with these unmanaged solutions. But yeah, I thought that's a really good example of, I suppose, the danger in even small organizations with untrusted software. But the point is, deploy ThreatLocker, try it out, see what's out there. And if you see something like a TeamViewer that you don't want, or you see something like a PharmGar or a Anydesk running on a machine that shouldn't be there, create a policy to block it.
Yeah.
You don't even have to lock the machine down to do so. You can block something immediately. But you deploy ThreatLocker, you secure it immediately.
Great.
Now, that allows organizations to get back up and running a lot faster than they would do if they literally have to get in, scan every single piece of hardware, and try and figure out if it's safe to turn this machine on or not. So we just allow the core things to run. The computer can come up without the danger of any malicious running on the machine.
Great.
And then work backwards from there
Well, you said it best, try ThreatLocker. I would recommend it. It's really the best way to support our podcast and platform. You all were gracious enough to sponsor this and also fly us out here.
Been a pleasure.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mike, Rob.
Yes, and thank you everyone for joining, learning a little bit more about Rob Allen and ThreatLocker. Love to see you all soon. And with that, we'll see everyone next time.